Good morning, lovely humans. If we haven't met, my name is Nelson. I am on staff with Artisan. My role is pastor of spiritual formation, but if you just started hanging around here since May, you would not have seen me in this space. And that's because I've just come off a 3-month sabbatical, which is an incredible gift and an immense privilege. And I do look forward to sharing more of what that's been like. For now, I'll just say that my key intentions, some of you might remember this from before I went, for this sabbatical were to read and write and rest. And I'm happy to report that all of those things happened to some degree, and some, in some senses, a significant degree. And I feel really deeply grateful to you as a community, to my staff colleagues for holding it down in my absence, and to the lead team for this opportunity. So thank you. Also, if anyone gets to sabbatical in the future, I don't recommend breaking your foot. At any point in time, but especially during your final week, you don't need to go out with a bang. It's unnecessary. And on a related note, if you happen to be in Seattle or any city and you need to catch a bus, just take your time. If you miss it, there will be another one. Or you could just Uber and not walk at all. That's a little insight into how this happened. Okay, shifting gears. I'm excited to have an opportunity to contribute something to the series that we've been in this summer, Metaphors for God. I was here last week and got to hear Tim bring it regarding bread. Good word. If you weren't here, have a listen to the podcast. And as the preaching team have been reminding us, a metaphor uses two domains of knowledge. There's a source and a target, and it overlaps them to increase our understanding of the target domain. So if you consider the phrase, life is a journey or a highway, journey is the source domain. It's something that we know in a concrete and embodied way. And in reflecting metaphorically, what we do is take those experiences and those ways of knowing to overlap the source domain with the target domain of life, a concept in which we're seeking greater understanding. So I love this series and the metaphors we've been exploring, shepherds, hens, clouds, bread. I think we need to add on the heels of Campbell's testimony, sunsets at outdoor concert venues. And I love this series about metaphor in part because I think Dr. Barbara Holmes was right when she said, every ordinary thing is infused with mystery. I am an everyday mystic, so are you. So, my fellow everyday mystics, for the next few moments, I invite you to explore with me the ordinary thing known as a grapevine. And this will be our source domain for this morning, and our target domain, as it has been, is the one we are being invited to know better, God. So to engage this metaphor together, we're going to anchor in the most well-known part of Scripture where we find the God as vine image, and that's John's Gospel, chapter 15. In the words of Jesus himself. But it's important to remember before we dig in there that vineyard imagery in the Bible predates Jesus by several thousand years. Here's an image of Sun Rock Vineyard on the Asuias Lake bench. Just imagine as you look at this image, this vineyard imagery goes way back to ancient Israel and to Hebrew scripture. And mainly what we see there is that a healthy vineyard is a symbol of flourishing. It's a symbol of flourishing. It's a picture of shalom. Everything in its right place, whole, at peace, working in harmony. And so Jesus' words in John 15 are very much in continuity with this Old Testament picture of everything flourishing. So I invite you to take your chair Bibles. They might be floor Bibles by this point, depending on your seating arrangement, and turn to John 15. The page number is on the screen if you need that. And just a little word about context. What's important to note here is that Jesus is with his disciples during what we now call Holy Week, which means he is nearing the moment of his suffering and death. He knows it's coming, but his closest followers still seem pretty confused about what's going on. And even so, here, Jesus is offering some final words to these humans with whom he shares the deepest levels of intimacy, These are the ones that are closest to him. They're still confused, but they're the closest ones to him. Theologians refer to this entire section between chapter 13 and 17 as the upper room discourse. This is where they were in Jerusalem during Holy Week. So lots of red letters in there if you have one of those kinds of Bibles. Let's just hear two verses for starters. I'm going to read verses 4 and 5 out of John 15. Jesus says, "Remain in me as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing." I'm going to read them again and invite some responses to just what stands out to you. Is there a word or phrase or something that sticks out to you? "Remain in me as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing." What do you notice? What do you hear? Just from where you are. Even just a single word that stands out. Remain. State the obvious one. Lots of repetition of that word. Anything else? No branch can bear fruit by itself. We have some conditions for fruit bearing. Okay. Wow, categorical. There's a firmness, a concreteness to, yeah. Thank you. Great. Any other noticings? Wow, that we get to experience fruit and that we get to actually be part of creating the fruit, co-creating the fruit or producing. Amazing. Great. Anyone else? Yeah. That's okay. There has to be a source. Yeah. And to be connected to that source in order to bear fruit. Yeah, Peter.
I noticed in I and you, which is the incredible mystery of God living in us.
Right. The I in you, this incredible mystery. Yeah, so notice the word remain and notice the word in. Who remains in whom? Both. Jesus asks, well, commands, really, his disciples to remain in him as what? He remains in them. One of my preaching mentors, Daryl Johnson, called it in that blessed preposition. Always remember him saying in blessed preposition. And friends, it doesn't get more intimate than in, right? Okay, so let's hold this stunning image for just a moment. Christ in us, us in him, and take a few breaths. Because just a few verses back, Jesus introduces a layer of complexity by giving his disciples an additional metaphor, as if Jesus didn't know that we're trying to do a series just within a summer, you know. Okay, an additional metaphor. Verse 1, "I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener." Now, there is enough in that secondary image to take up at least another whole sermon, but we have to look at it briefly because the images are connected. And together, they offer not only a deeper understanding of God, but of ourselves in relationship to God. And because, as many of you know, I am a certified wine nerd, I think we need to look at it through the eyes of a famous vineyard manager known as the Queen of Burgundy, Lalou Bise-Leroy. So here is Lalou among the vines. I was introduced to her while researching my book and watching a documentary called A Year in Burgundy. And I want you to listen to the way she speaks of her vineyards. "Of course, I know my vines. When they don't see me, they're unhappy. When I arrive, they're happy. I really love my vines. Vines are not well understood. You have to put yourself in their place. You have to understand why they're not doing well. You have to be part of the life of the vine and the life of the soil too. That's all you've got to do. Of course, I believe in biodynamics. We should cut out all chemical substances, the herbicides, the insecticides, the fungicides, the pesticides, all the icides. They sound just like homicide. We should stop killing things and give them the life force instead." And then I continue with these words. "There is an intimacy between humans and vines, one that requires a deep knowledge of what is most needed at any given time. There are times, for example, when giving them the life force looks and feels a lot more like tough love." The Queen of Burgundy's former winemaker, Didi Pancheret, put it this way. This is also from the film, and it's in French, and so it's this broken translation, and it's beautiful. "A vine has to suffer to make good grapes. You can't coddle it, or it will become lazy like a couch potato. He sits there, and you feed him. He doesn't have to work. If the roots don't dig deep, there's trouble. They have to go down 4 or 5 meters. Then, if it's dry for a couple of months, no problem. The vine will survive. A vine can live 100 years if you treat it right. I really love my vines, and a vine has to suffer. It's a fine line." Let's come back to the words of Jesus in John 15, 1 and 2 now. "I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful." This is a picture of divine pruning and a vineyard practice known as shoot thinning. I don't know if you've ever pictured God as a gardener, but I invite you to do so now. And close your eyes if it's helpful. Maybe hold the image of Lalou as a reflection of the divine walking up and down the rows saying, "Yes, I know my vines. When they don't see me, they're unhappy. When I arrive, they're happy. I really love my vines." I don't know who needs to hear this, but pruning is not punishment. It's not punishment. The vine grower, even when expressing tough love to vines, never does so with impunity. Nor could the vine treat the branches that way. If you've been handed an image of a punitive God, that is a severely flawed image. God is love who does not stoke fear, period. What does perfect love do to fear? Drives it out. According to Jesus in John's gospel, God is like a gardener deeply in love with their vines and branches, pruning and thinning out the over-congested areas out of a desire for fruitfulness and flourishing of shalom. This reveals something about the divine parent's role. And in this same picture, Jesus is the vine. So what's our role then as branches? Let's come back to verse 4. "Remain in me, as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me." What's our work? Well, rest from the song. And alongside that, remain, stay put, don't leave. The Greek word there is meno, M-E-N-O. It means abide, stay connected. Jesus says, "I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will be given the life force." That's my new favorite paraphrase. And then he says, "Apart from me, you can do nothing." So if we take Jesus' words at face value, that nothing even includes our own work. We can't prune ourselves. right? The strength, the impetus, the desire, and discipline to engage our pruning comes from outside ourselves. The life force sometimes takes the form of grace to be received. And our task is to stay close to the source. Here's the thing, loved ones. Even though we know who the vine is, we know the name of the one who is the source of life that's truly life, we often search, don't we, for our ultimate sustenance in people and things that are not the vine. Just me? Can we create a little list together? Now, hear me out. As I offer this list, and I invite you to add to it, let me be clear that I think God as the vine can be seen and experienced at some level through the vast majority of what will be on the list. Does that make sense? If you know me well, you know the last thing that I want to do here is set up a wall between the spiritual and the physical, the sacred and the secular. In other words, I offer this list through the lens of Barbara Brown Taylor's beautiful caveat when she said, human beings may separate things into as many piles as we wish, separating spirit from flesh, sacred from secular, church from world. But we should not be surprised when God does not recognize the distinctions we make between the two. Earth is so thick with divine possibility that it is a wonder we can walk anywhere without cracking our shins on altars or breaking our feet on uneven pavement. With that disclaimer, a few suggestions of things that are not the vine. And here I'm defining vine as the ultimate source of life and love, who desires our flourishing and the shalom of the entire universe. Just that. Your favorite artist is not the vine. Your favorite celebrity, your favorite podcast, even though it slaps. Your favorite follow on socials, your favorite beverage. And we could say my to all this, be clear. Your favorite restaurant, not the vine. Your favorite vacation destination, as good as it may have been this summer, I don't know, not the vine. Your phone is not the vine. Your diet is not the vine. Your workout routines, not the vine. Your home, your housemate or roommate, your spouse or partner, your school, your degrees, your resume, your neighborhood group might give you access to the vine, not the vine. Your counselor, not the vine. Your therapist, your spiritual director, your pastor. Artisan church, it's not the vine. What or whom else would you add to the list? Anyone? Say again? Iced coffee, just naming specific beverages. Yeah, man, that could be a whole series. Yeah. Maybe not, vocation, your vocation, good, thank you, your job. Activism is not the vine. Authors, thank you, and your partner, yeah. Parents, thank you. Children, not the vine. There's some surprise. We thought we were the vine. Bible. Thank you. Ideology, worldview, not the vine. Yeah. Who's the vine? Jesus is the vine. His life, his love, his teaching, his death, resurrection, his way of seeing and listening and leading, his way of asking questions, his way of co-suffering, of producing fruit and flourishing in you and even through you, me, us, for the sake of the world. Whew. And what's the invitation for us as branches? Stay put, remain, abide. Simple, right? Well, easy to say, but what does it look like in practice? How do we know we're abiding? How do we know we're not? I'll take a few more minutes to talk about one way to practice abiding, and that's solitude. I want to say a bit about the fruit that comes from it as well. Introduce a couple of rich quotes to you here. One thing that's often, I think, wildly misunderstood in the church is God's presence. How do we define it? How do we apprehend it? How do we attune to it? And along with that related, how does an unseen God communicate with us? Consider these words from Strand Coleman from the Instagram account known as Commoner's Communion. God isn't a loud, post-industrial, influencer-type, charismatic TV personality. God is gentle and humble, meek and kind. You won't find God shouting over the noise of our consuming, busy, and hyper-stimulated lives. God's presence is quiet, subtle, but powerful. And it takes us lowering the energy and pace of our lives to discover it. Often, we feel God as absent or silent when really we're the ones who are in effect absent. We're turning up the radio of our lives while God is gently speaking in the front seat beside us. Take a moment to breathe deeply. Let your soul awaken to love. God is engulfing you. May God have you in return. Such a beautiful, winsome invitation. But for many of us, we need solitude to respond to it. We put up one more quote by one of my favorite everyday mystics, Wendell Berry. One that paints a picture of what can happen as we enter and learn to practice solitude. He writes, "We enter solitude in which we also lose loneliness. True solitude is found in the wild places where one is without human obligation. One's inner voices become audible. One feels the attraction of one's most intimate sources. In consequence, one responds more clearly to other lives. The more coherent one becomes within oneself as a creature, the more fully one enters into the communion of all creatures." I love so many aspects of this. First, the paradox of entering solitude and losing loneliness. That's a wild thought. Solitude often becomes a threshold that can open us to a deepened sense of connection to God, to ourselves, to others, and to creation. I also love the image of wild places. As you probably know, in scripture, wild places or wilderness were most often places of encounter with the divine. The fruit of inner voices becoming audible, our awareness of our most intimate sources rising to the surface. Do you know this reality? Have you experienced that or noticed this happening when you're in solitude? We have a deep human need to be alone and still and silent for an extended time. Oftentimes, it's only there that we can actually begin to hear our interior voices, to attune to our most intimate sources, and to taste the nourishment of the vine. The part that starts with inconsequence might be my favorite, that the fruit of solitude is an increased clarity of response to the lives of others. Have you felt the difference in your body, in your emotions, between someone responding to you from a noisy, worried, anxiety-ridden center versus a calm, grounded, non-anxious space? You know what it's like on the receiving end, right? So imagine the fruit of our lives as we project outward. There's also a coherence within yourself. And this is maybe a bit tricky to define, but one picture. One way I experience this is by letting my inner coherence be felt and heard by journaling what I hear. I almost always experience greater clarity if I've carved out time to unburden myself, to untangle the webs of my inner thoughts by writing them down. And lastly, there is a more robust entry into the communion of all creatures. As Tim was reminding us last week, bread is like that image in this sense too. It's meant to be shared, distributed. And so is the fruit of our lives that comes from solitude, from abiding. So this is the biggest myth I want to bust, that the end game of contemplative practice is navel-gazing and self-absorption. No. Its fruit is exactly as diverse and open and generous and beautifully self-giving as we would want it to be and as the world needs it to be. So Stephen Batchelor can say, here lies the paradox of solitude. Look long and hard enough at yourself in isolation, and suddenly you will see the rest of humanity staring back. Sustained aloneness brings you to a tipping point where the pendulum of life returns you to others. So just a few thoughts on one way to abide. I'm gonna put up an image now. This is from a beautiful Instagram account called Psalm Prayers. Some of you perhaps follow. And notice the title, A Still Life with Fruit. And as you look at this image and consider the fruit that is emerging from your life in the vine, let me offer a few questions for reflection, and then we'll close with a brief silence together. What might it look like to remain close to the true vine, the one ultimate source of life in this season? What practices will help you remember it's not all up to you? That even getting down to your work depends on grace. What habits and rhythms remind you who you are? That you are good, that you are beloved, that you are enough. And lastly, what habits and rhythms serve to remind you who Jesus is, the true vine, apart from whom we can do nothing? Let's hold stillness together just for a brief moment, and then we'll close.